Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a great week, 1 week closer. We're inching closer to kick off with the Ravens and the Kansas City Chiefs. I've been seeing it all over the Olympics. My wife is an Olympics nut. 15 hours a day of Olympics coverage. There's been plenty of Lamar and Patrick Mahomes and plenty of Peyton Manning and Snoop and Mike Tirico and everything to think it's already football season around here, but they're playing everything but football. Meanwhile, the Orioles are playing baseball, and Luke Jones is monitoring that in Toronto as well as on the backfields in Owings Mills all week long. I like saying the first place Orioles. I had a chance to say that for the past 6-7 weeks. You know, they've run into the rocks here a little bit, playing 500 or less than 500 baseball for a period of time. The Yankees have been worse, and now the Orioles measure themselves against the Guardians over the weekend, the other really good team. Now they're going to play the division, and some of the teams they've made trades with in recent weeks as well. On the road, out of sight, out of mind, Ravens are going to play a meaningless game on Friday here this week, but an important week here to sort of establish all of these changes that you and I have outlined in the lineup and all the things that have gone on. But we're also going to get to see where Toronto and Tampa are this week, not bound for the playoffs.
Right. I think this is a week where you want to see the Orioles take advantage of two teams that are clearly looking toward the future, two teams that sold off players at the trade deadline, and two teams that have been the weak links in the division. And I know Tampa Bay has played okay baseball over the last week to 10 days. I mean, there are a few games over 500, but you kind of look at their statistical profile with a 57-54 record, minus 43 run differential. They've been amazing in one run games. They're not, and even more so now with having traded off the players that they've traded, I'm not sure how much you really look at that and say, oh, they're a major threat. Now you got to go play. They got to go to Toronto and play well. They've got to go down to the Trop and play well, knowing what kind of energy level either place is going to have. And I don't expect Toronto to have a particularly great atmosphere this week either, knowing where the Blue Jays are in last place. So this is very much an opportunity for them. And we've talked so much about the Orioles struggling against National League teams or struggling against the AL Central or what have you. You know, they've been pretty good against their own division this year, right? And, you know, we've seen them take care of business largely. So this is a week where you want to continue to do that, because the Yankees, like the Orioles, have been playing better of late. And certainly we saw over the weekend as both teams won Saturday and Sunday to stay in this first place tie. But, you know, there's no let up here. So I think you always have to be mindful of playing a division opponent, where I think there's, even for teams that aren't very good, Tampa and Toronto are still looking at the standings and saying, you know, how can we mess things up for the Orioles? How can we mess things up for the Red Sox and the Yankees? So you definitely have to go and play good baseball. And, you know, that's the challenge right now. I mean, you're going to be on the road for another week or so. This is, you know, one of the really long road trips of the season. And you've got to take care of business. And you hope the way that they were able to recover against Cleveland bodes well for going to Toronto and going to down to St. Petersburg and taking care of business. Because, hey, like we said in a previous segment, we're under 50 games to go now. I mean, it's not full sprint just yet. You know, we still have close to 2 months to go, but you can't afford to have any more periods like they had through most of the month of July, if we're being honest. So I think from that standpoint, opportunity for this team to finish the road trip on a high note, get back home, get into the meat of the August schedule. But, you know, these are two teams that have nothing to play for right now other than to hurt you. So you've got to be ready to play when you show up on Tuesday night.
I guess for these divisional games and where they are, and we've talked so much about the lineup and so much about the young players, let's talk a little bit about Mayo and Holiday, just in a general sense that they're here to stay now. You know, obviously with the Westberg thing, I don't know what would have them send Mayo out. It hasn't been a great start, at least in the beginning part of this. Holiday has figured it out. Certainly with Holiday, bat looks a lot faster. And whatever adjustments you throw at a 20-year-old who's been a phenom since he held a wiffle ball bat, that you – the feeling amongst the elite people in the organization is look at him and say, he's adjusted to everything else, that he's like a Gunnar Henderson. I mean, it's an incredible embarrassment of riches. As we look at the lineup, we look at Mayo, we look at Holiday and say, well, they're rookies, that we don't expect much out of them in the way we probably didn't expect much out of Jordan Westberg in the fall, right? We just expected him to be hit 250, hit 260, maybe hit 12, 15 bombs, hang around, be a good defensive player, be a major leaguer, look like a major league player, not look like an all-star. But I think the jury's out on Holiday and Mayo, because I think we both do look at them a little differently.
Well, but even that being said, if Jackson Holiday gives you major league average offense at age 20 in the midst of a pennant race and does that the rest of the way, I think we need to look at that, and you're grading on a curve and you say, that's awesome. Not just because of how he looked in April, but just knowing what a 20-year-old is, you know, a 20-year-old is typically
where Machado was in 12 when they brought him up, right? Like, literally.
That's the thing. And Manny Machado wasn't Manny Machado of what he would become, but he was a solid contributor with the bat, you know, had his moments. I mean, I remember vividly his 2-home run game, which was like the first, you know, a couple days after he was called up and all of that. So
he made a great defensive play early on and we're like, wow, you know?
Yeah, remember, Machado was here for his defense. They didn't call him up because, oh, wow, this kid's raking at Double A. Go look at what his numbers were at Bowie that year before they called him up. It wasn't anything special. It was, we have a need at defense because we're sick of seeing Mark Reynolds and Wilson Betemeet play in third base, or try to play third base is probably the better way to describe it. And we think the kid can come up and hold his own. So
the perception is Mayo's not going to be good at third base.
Well, a couple things we need to understand. First of all, Jordan Westberg got hurt, right? I mean, they weren't planning on making Kobe Mayo their everyday third baseman right now, but your hand is forced and he has more upside than Ramon Urias, who is limited offensively and not as good defensively as he was a couple years ago, even. Now, is he better than Kobe Mayo at third base right now? Sure, I'll give you that, but where's the upside, right? There's not really an upside play there. Now, if Mayo botches ground ball after ground ball or something like that over the next week to 10 days, then we can revisit this. But I think they're clearly looking at a young player who, by the way, is only 22 himself. You know, he's older than Jackson Holiday, but he's still a very young player as well. This isn't a 24 or a 25-year-old being called up where you say, okay, you know, he's kind of the average age of a prospect. No, he's on the younger side as well. But, you know, you look at both of these guys and you say, what can I reasonably expect from them that is a positive contribution for what this team is trying to accomplish in the big picture? And again, if they can be league average type hitters right now and play solid defense. And, you know, I know, you know, Holiday dropped the pop up, you know, kind of lost it in the sun on Sunday, even though they ended up getting the force at second base.
Mayo got out in left field further than he should have gotten.
Yeah, right. I mean, and look, some of that is there. Buck Showalter used to talk about this a lot, and more specifically with outfielders, but I think it applies even for infielders. You've got to remember, these guys are not used to playing in a major league ballpark where you have three decks and you have fans everywhere. You know, minor league ballparks are much smaller. There's much more open space. You know, you don't have fans in the backdrop of everywhere you're looking. So that doesn't mean that they just get a free pass indefinitely. But I think there is a little bit of an adjustment period with that. But, you know, with these two guys, I mean, we've already, in the case of Holiday, now Mayo, maybe not as much. But again, we're talking about three games, right? I mean, three games is nothing for even evaluating a veteran player. You know, you can see a veteran player look terrible for three straight games. But in the case of Holiday, since his return, we're already seeing why so many of the conclusions that people jumped to back in April. Yeah, I mean, this is a special talent. I mean, this is the kind of kid who already, since being recalled, has 2 home runs, has, you know, really looked much more comfortable at the plate, has handled a variety of pitches at the plate. You know, didn't abandon the leg kick, but I think adjusted a little bit in terms of, you know, I think his timing's way better to kind of recognize pitches and adjust and do what he needs to do. You know, his strikeouts have been more, you know, a couple of those came on bad calls, as we mentioned in a previous segment, a rough weekend for the Blue over the course of the weekend. But
and the orange and black.
Sure. Well, sure. But I think, I'm thrilled with what I'm seeing from Jackson Holliday since being recalled. He's showing you now why the Orioles and why all of baseball and the Baseball Americas and the MLB pipelines of the world were talking about how special this kid is at age 20. And you're starting to see that. And let's be clear, doesn't mean he's going to hit 350 the rest of the way. Doesn't mean he's not going to have his times where he's going to struggle still, as any player does. But you're seeing a much more comfortable version of Jackson Holliday. And that's where I think we need to be mindful in looking at Kobe Mayo and say, yeah, I get it. Mayo struck out three times on Sunday and, you know, breaking balls and, you know, throwing him a lot of breaking stuff away. You know, he's got to adjust and they're going to, you know, they're not just going to give him fastballs down the pike, you know, and
not well, and gonna... if he's getting the Greg Maddux strike zone,
that doesn't help either. That doesn't help either.
Especially once you got two strikes and trying to cover the plate.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you have some of that, and, you know, Holliday's dealt with a little bit of that, even with swinging the bat well here. But, you know, I mean, this is part of becoming a major leaguer, and you've got to deal with the ebbs and flows. I think if nothing else, what April provided for Jackson Holliday, I think will be very valuable in the sense of that was probably the first time he's really failed on a baseball field. Now, if it's a 10 game failure when you're what, 20 years. And at that point he was 20 years and 4 months or something like that. I mean, you know, still a long ways away from his 21st birthday at that point in time, then boy, you've got something. But I think that was a good experience for him to have some failure. You know, maybe no one was predicting him to be sent back down, but it's, hey, all right, you need to adjust.
And then he got injured.
Yeah. He had the sore elbow. And so, you know, this year hasn't gone to plan for him by any stretch of the imagination, but
he turns 21 on December 4th,
right,
by the way,
right. We're still months away from him.
Had to look his birthday up. So I sent him a card.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, we're talking about someone who can't legally drink a beer yet, and he's playing Major League Baseball, and he did it at a high level over the course of the weekend in Cleveland against the best team in baseball record wise. So he's fine. And what I mean by that is, let's let him play. Mayo, we're going to see, right? I mean, maybe he has dramatic enough struggles where they end up sending him back, because, you know, it happened to Colton Cowser last year. It happened to Holliday earlier this year. We saw Gunnar Henderson really, you know, kind of flounder the first 6 weeks of last season, right? Where really it was only his ability to draw walks. And
but this
defense.
Is a tough 6 weeks if Westberg's out and you're going to play Mayo at third base. And we're seeing Urias play a week and a half from now because it didn't work. That would be disappointing, especially with Westbrook probably not coming back during the regular season, at least.
Well, I mean, we don't know. I he's not going to come back till the end of the regular season, the way it's looking. I think probably a best case scenario. And you know, they've been vague about the timeline, but you know, you kind of look at that injury, you kind of think of something like that. Even on the better side of things, it's a 4 to 6 week kind of thing. You're
Dude,
talking
it's a
mid-September.
Hand thing, gripping the back, gripping the ball, all of it.
Yeah.
It's just terrible.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's tough. I mean, it's good that it's the hand, you know, kind of below the pinky is where it was rather than in the wrist and something like that. So it's better there, but yeah, it's not ideal. And even when he comes back, is he going to look like Jordan Westberg right away? So it's unfortunate, but it's not losing your franchise quarterback in the NFL or your top scorer in the NBA where everyone still has to wait their turn. You know, as great as a player is, he's one of nine that goes to the plate every night. So, you know, you need other guys to step up. And that's where Holliday coming up and looking like he's got a chance to do some damage for them and be a plus contributor for them is great. That helps right there, even if it's not a one-for-one trade-off there in terms of position and all that. But, you know, we'll see what happens with Mayo. I mean, a week from now, we might be talking about Kobe Mayo making – you know, late push for rookie of the month or something like that. I mean, who knows? But, you know, you have these guys who have such upside. And the thing that I do like about them calling up Mayo now, even if their hand was forced, is understanding, yeah, he's probably going to scuffle a little bit because we've seen everyone from Rutschman on down struggle when they've been called up to the major leagues. But if you can get that out of the way over the next 3 to 4 weeks, and when I say struggle, I don't mean struggle like Jackson Holliday struggled in April, where it was so much swing and miss, so many strikeouts, so much a look of someone who was overwhelmed, right? Let's say it's more of the, okay, you know, he might be hitting 190, but, you know, he's putting some, you know, making some hard contact. And for the most part, he looks okay at third base. You know, I can live with that for a few weeks with the idea in mind that that's going to make him better potentially for September and October. And if he's truly the kind of upside offensive player that I think they believe he's going to be, then he could potentially be a real contributor and a real force for them come September and October. But you got to take your licks some, right? I mean, you've got to acclimate. And the reality is, yeah, you could put Ramon Arias in there, but what are you really getting there? I think we know what Ramon Arias is at this point in his career. And I think it's, you know, a guy who might play for a second division team, but he's a bench player. You know, he's a reserve. He's more of a utility type at this point in time. So I think they want to give Mayo as many opportunities here as possible to get his feet wet and see what it looks like. Again, if he's hitting a buck 20 2 weeks from now, and he's striking out in half his plate appearances, then it's probably a decent chance he ends up getting sent down. But I think you want to really see what this looks like and give him every opportunity because of what you just said. You don't know if Jordan Westbrook's going to come back. So if he's not, if he has a setback, or if they find out the fracture is worse than they thought and he's done, then you know, the more opportunities you've given Kobe Mayo, the increased likelihood or probability there is that come mid-September and into October, he might be able to be more productive for you. So it is such a challenge. And we talked about this a lot in our previous segment where you have so much roster churn that we've seen here with so many new pieces and guys called up and guys traded and veteran players coming in, including veteran players who were playing for really bad teams like Eloy Jimenez, who had a bad year in Chicago, but my gosh, the White Sox have lost 20 games in a row. I mean, can you imagine, is anyone going to flourish in that environment? So it really is a case of adding these new pieces, whether we're talking about the rookies or these veterans that have come in from other teams, and seeing what's going to work out. And that's where it is a bit of a challenge for Brandon Hyde to kind of, you know, and this front office to want to win games every night. And that's paramount. But yes, you are doing some evaluating right now as well. And that's, you know, that's a tricky balance. You know, that's a tricky balance to try to strike there. But
they've lost 20 games in a row.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's crazy, right? We recall it's easy because we try to forget, but the 2021 Orioles lost 19 in a row in August, right? They've been worse than that. And we saw what that looked like 3 years ago. So in the case of Jimenez, I mean, it's you bring a veteran player in who 5 years ago looked like he was going to be a serious all-star kind of slugger, and he's got a specialized role now. And the Orioles have not taken on much financial risk. And you just say, what's it going to look like? You know, if he stinks and doesn't swing and what he did over the weekend is all he does as an Oriole, then he might not be on the team 3 or 4 weeks from now. Or he's this generation of Orioles.
Well, it sounds to me like something that Brandon Hyde likes him and wanted him on the team.
Well,
I
don't think Brandon Hyde was the one who, you know, he wasn't the driving force. But I do think what they said is, okay, we need some more right-handed pop. And Eloy Jimenez is someone who's having a bad year. White Sox are desperate to get rid of him. It's not going to cost us anything of consequence whatsoever. If we're willing to take on a little money, but they're going to pay some of his salary as well. Let's take a flyer on it.
Do we want him on the team? Do we want him on the team?
Sure.
That was the question.
And,
right?
and then at that point they ask, hey, Brandon, you know, what do you think about Jimenez when he was in the Cubs system? And, you know, what do you think of him? Did you get along? Did you have any meaningful experiences with him? All that, like, tell us about it. And look, that was a long time ago. So whatever that is, 6 years, I mean, that's an eternity when you're talking about trying to figure out who a player is, but personality wise and what he does best and what might get him to tick. You know, maybe there is a little bit of extra insight there, but a lot of this is just, they took a flyer. This is not a high risk. They did not give up a prospect for him. You know, they basically said, we'll take him off your hands. Spend a little money and cover, help cover.
It's a free player, literally. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And if what he did over the weekend is all he does as an Oriole, then hey, he helped you win some games on Saturday and Sunday, right? I mean, so, you know, you kind of look at it through that lens. And, you know, that's really the case with any of these veterans they brought in. I mean, Sir Anthony Dominguez, we've seen pitch in some high leverage. You know, Gregory Soto had a brutal debut, but I think they want to see what he can do. I mean, a hard throwing left-hander. And certainly has swing and miss. And at one point in time was an all-star closer, albeit for the Detroit Tigers, a team that was bad at the time. But, you know, these are guys that have a little bit of experience, you know, with high leverage and even closing games. And I said to you that they need some other options if Kimbrel is going to not figure it out, or if Kimbrel's going to get himself straightened out and then go into another tailspin the last week of September. So it's not ideal. Look, I'd love to have a healthy Felix Bautista anchoring the bullpen, but they don't.
Yeah, there's not going to be a closer emerge here in the next 8 weeks, right? I mean, Kimbrel's going to be the guy in the ninth inning in October they're going to give the ball to. I'm pretty convinced of that.
How's he pitching?
Fair enough.
Because this is where I'll give them some credit. They've been, and they did this back in May even. I agree with you. If Craig Kimbrel looks right and he gets on a roll like he was in for the second half of May through the month of June, then yeah, he's their ninth inning guy. I'm not suggesting that, but if he's going to waver and if he's going to labor and not look like Craig Kimbrel at his best and start to struggle, and if he blows a game or two, then I'm looking at other options. That doesn't mean he's banished to the sixth inning, but I'm going to look at the matchups and say, hey, this might be a spot for Sir Anthony Dominguez to come in and pitch the ninth inning, because it's, you know, three righties up and, you know, he's got some numbers against these guys, and, you know, this guy doesn't hit the slider very well. So, you know, you kind of just look at it through that lens. I mean, you need other options. So yes, I'm with you in the sense of if Kimbrel writes himself, then yeah, he's the closer, but I'll continue to say, I think any team that tries to treat their closer like he's a shutdown closer and just unconditionally pitches him in the ninth inning every time there's a save situation, I think you're doing your team a disservice. If it's Felix Bautista, yes, then he's pitching in the save situation every time, right? He's that good. Or, you know, you talk about, I mean, even Class A for Cleveland might not be the best example, because they've got three or four other arms that are really good, but pick whichever great, truly great closer that you like in today's game. You know, Craig Kimbrel is not that guy anymore. He is a closer, but he's not an elite shutdown closer, no questions asked. So if you don't have that guy, then I think a manager, I think a team should, you know, they're doing themselves a favor by opening it up a little bit more and not being married to the same guy for the ninth inning, unquestionably. I think pick your spots. You know, there might be a time where it makes sense to go to a lefty for the ninth inning, because you've got three or four guys due up that are left-handed swingers. So, you know, I think we saw the Orioles do this in September last year on the heels of Bautista being hurt. Brandon Hyde did match up much more. Now, you do have Craig Kimbrel. And again, if Craig Kimbrel looks right again and gets some stuff straightened out, then fine. But I think you have enough options. I don't think, I'm not going to sit here and say I trust all of them unconditionally 100%, but you have enough options where explore, make it a little more matchup based, you know, look at it through that lens. So that's where I kind of said this is the challenge right now when you have so many new parts, whether you're talking about lineup or the bullpen, or let's face it, we haven't even talked about this. Trevor Rogers, new to the rotation. Zach Eflin, new to the rotation. Eflin so far, so good, right? You know, pitched well over the weekend. Rogers, not so good in his debut. You know, pretty bad, quite frankly. But, you know, you're trying to figure out what these guys can do. You know, what's the best spot for some of these guys? When do you pull Eflin? When do you pull Rogers? When do you leave them in there a little bit longer? You know, so there is, you're trying to win every night. Let's be clear. It's not an excuse, but at the same time, you are trying to learn about these players a little bit, because, you know, nothing's determined on August 5th or August 10th or August 20th. Yes, you want to keep winning. Yes, you want to win the division and beat out the Yankees, but the ultimate goal is still October and making a deep October run. And they've got to learn about some of these new pieces they have to kind of figure out what's going to be the optimal use, the optimal lineup, the optimal bullpen usage, what our rotation's going to look like, all those different things. If you're Brandon Hyde and Mike Elias, there is a little bit of that goes on, and that's scary, because you'd like everything to be set in August, but that's just not where this team is right now. So makes for some unsettling moments, but I think it also makes for some fun moments, because who knows? Sir Anthony Dominguez could get on an absolute roll, and maybe he does become their at least part-time closer the rest of the way. I mean, he did that for Philly a couple years ago, and you know, Gregory Soto was an all-star closer at one point in time. I'm not saying it's going to happen now, but you at least are intrigued by the options that you're adding here. They've added more swing and miss, and it's just a matter of the ideally Craig Kimbrell gets himself situated and looks like he did earlier, after he had his little swoon in early May. But they also have to plan for the possibility that that doesn't happen, or he goes through another one of these. And I think the key, and this is where I'll give Hyde some credit. They have not, they've shown a willingness to say, Craig, we love you, but you're struggling right now. We're going to go with someone else for the time being. And you might pitch the seventh inning or the eighth inning, and for a little while, and we'll come back to you, but we need you to be right. So they have not just said, oh, he's our closer, he's our closer, he's our closer, no matter what. And it'd be foolish to proceed that way, because he's just not that elite guy that he was a decade ago. But if you use him correctly, I think he can still be really good. And I think he can still, they're going to need him. Let's be clear. If Craig
Well, it's
Kimbrell goes
three
in the
outs at a
10th.
time, inning by inning, right? Night by night. And case by case, based on what your lead is, based on how far your starter went, based on who pitched yesterday, based on this week, they actually had a day off. It feels like they haven't had a day off since April to me, right? Like, days off are like, they don't play today? What? You're kidding me, right? It feels like they went the whole month of June and didn't have a day off. It feels like they play baseball twice a day every day in some cases.
I mean, we talked about June a lot, and how much of that contributed to their struggles. It's probably a factor, right? I mean, they had so few days off, but hey, it's also baseball, and you've got to
And they
push
had
through it.
guys
Just
injured at that point. They didn't have Kramer at that point. All the arms started to fall off. I mean, that was tough.
It was a tough, and that's the thing. I mean, that's why. Look, I understand, and look, I've expressed concern. You and I've expressed concern about this baseball team over the last 5 weeks, but you also need to take a step back and say, okay, as bad as it looked for a while there, as concerning as it felt for a while there, they're 21 games over 500 in the first week of August, even after a 5 week period where they played 90 plus loss baseball in terms of pace. They're fine. They're
And
right there
having
with
a
the
rotation
Yankees.
with Suarez and Cole Irvin and whatever
Yeah,
that
I mean,
looked like for a long period of time.
all of that, right? I mean, nothing. It hasn't gone perfectly, and the Yankees are the same way. And for as much as they struggled, the Yankees struggled. Cleveland went through a period of time where they weren't playing as well. I mean, look in the National League. The Phillies haven't been right for a while now, to the point where the Braves, despite all the Braves' injuries, have kind of climbed back into that race a little bit more. This is it's 162, right? I mean, as much as it's fun to talk about the pace that they were on earlier and say, oh, well, they've got a chance to, they might equal the 69 and 70 Orioles,
Yeah, when you see a six in front of the percentages, that's when things change to me. You're playing 610, 620 ball. That's different than 577 ball. Anybody can play 577 ball, you know?
Not anyone can play 577 ball for a period of time, right? Not, I mean, even for a full season. I mean, we're still talking about a team that's, on a pace to win well over 90 games, right? And still have a chance to be the number one seed. Point is, all the struggles they've had and everything that's gone wrong in terms of injuries of the starting pitching, and Westberg with the injury, Mateo with the injury, Adley Rutschman looking awful for 5 weeks, just awful at the plate for 5 weeks. Gunnar Henderson going through a 5 week period where he didn't look terrible overall at the plate, but the power kind of went away, right?
They also had their
All the
number
things
one
that you can
prospect
point to
fail,
and
come up and
Mount Cal.
fail terribly and have to go back
Yeah,
to the minors
back in April,
and have an
sure.
injury. Yeah.
Right. But I was but more so talking about this 5 to 6 week period where it hasn't gone as well. All of that being said, they are still right there to win the division. They are still right there to be the number one seed in the AL. So look, you can always look at it through the negative lens and say, oh, well, wow, they could have a, if they had played better baseball, they'd be 7 games up on the Yankees and they'd have a comfortable lead for home field advantage and all that. And look, that's true, but it could always be worse too. The Yankees could have played amazing baseball over the last 5 weeks while the Orioles struggled, and we'd be talking about a wild card because they'd be out of the division. So you just kind of, you have to look at it through its, to, in its totality. And you say, even with how this season's gone, with some of the peaks and valleys and injuries and all of that, and Westberg being the most recent example of unfortunate injury that really hurts, they're still right there. And there's still so much to like about this team. And now you add Jackson Holliday into the mix and you say, okay, I'm not saying the kid's going to be a superstar immediately, but what he's looked like since he's come back has been promising. It's looked pretty good to the point where if he keeps hitting like this, he's probably not going to be hitting ninth anymore. But You know, you look at that. You give Mayo some time here to establish himself. You see if Eloy Jimenez can be a nice platoon bat for you off the bench and all of that. You see if Gunnar can get himself going again with the home run ball, which, you know, it's starting to look like maybe that ends up being the case with the home run on Sunday that he had and starting to hit for more power. Rutschman had a couple knocks and drove in runs on Sunday, so that was good to see. So, you know, I think you still have to look at what this team's been for now over 4 months on the heels of what they did last year and say, there's still so much to like about what they are. And now, you know, how about the fact that they won on Sunday with Corbin Burnes having probably his worst start of the year, right? He gave up 5 runs, albeit 4 of them earned, but the unearned run was because of the error that he committed. So
And you could see he was not pleased with that.
Sure. But that's going to happen. And they won, right? I mean, we've talked, how much have we talked about the last few weeks where we say, wow, if it's not Burnes or Grayson Rodriguez, and now Eflin obviously being added into that conversation, if it's not one of those guys starting, boy, they're in trouble. Well, Burnes didn't pitch well on Sunday. And guess what? It didn't matter because they still won because they ended up scoring 9 runs. So it was good to see. So the offense has come alive. Pitching, you know, is still very much an open book in terms of what it's going to look like. You really hope that, you know, I feel really good about the Orioles' top three in the rotation now with Eflin in that picture. Kramer, you know, it's how's he going to be pitching come the last week of September? And same with Trevor Rogers, right? I mean, these are your number four and five starters, whichever order you want to put them in. And what you're hoping is one of those guys is pitching well enough to say, hey, when we need a number four starter in October, then that'll be the guy. And the other guy will be in the bullpen then in long relief. So, you know, there's a lot of, I keep using the word evaluation and people, I know people don't want to hear that when you're talking about a contending team, but when you have as many new pieces as you do, you are trying to figure out what's going to fit. You know, where is Gregory Rogers going to fit or Gregory Soto, I'm sorry. Mixing my left-handers together right there.
That's
But
Trevor.
where is Gregory Soto going to fit as far as best ways for Brandon Hyde to use him? Where is Sir Anthony going to fit in terms of where to use him? What's this mean for Cano now? You know, your hope part of this is also hoping you don't have to work Cano and Jacob Webb quite as hard as you have all season because you're hoping you add another guy or two here that you're going to come to trust. Now, Soto, his first time out, not so much,
Well,
but
you gave him a B minus 2 weeks ago on the trade deadline, right? Or a week ago. It feels like a month ago, but a week
It feels
ago,
like
the
a
deals
while
happened,
ago.
right? It was a long time ago. The trade, it hadn't even been a week. It's been 6 days as we said, 5 days as we sit here and talk. But you gave him a B minus in regard to the deadline. You know, that becomes an A minus if one of the relievers is good, if one of the starters really establishes. It wasn't Rogers last week at this point, but he made changes around the edges without giving away the farm. We'll judge that 2 years from now when Mayo and Holiday and you know all the guys he didn't deal are and Basayo, these guys are all going to be a part of this thing that you don't give those pieces up. But there is an expectation they better have a parade here in November or whatever they did wasn't good enough. And that's a different sort of measurement. For the we sit here every time I talk anything about the football team in August, everybody says, "Wake me up the 3rd week of January." I'm like, "Wow, we've come a long way with the football team. We're getting that way with the baseball team a little bit to say if they fail again in October and they don't win a game or win one and go home after 4 days early in October, you would start to look at it and say, well, who's this isn't really about playing to get to October 5th and play a playoff game. They did that last year. We're already assuming they're there, having played 600 ball all year. Now it's where are these pieces going to sit in an October lineup? And to your point, you're like, they haven't been afraid to make changes. I mean, just look at the roster. The roster's got what, seven, eight guys on it that weren't around here 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago? That's a third of the roster.
I mean, it's, you know, it's in that territory, no question. Now, and again, I mean, we're still, you know, bullpen pieces are pretty fluid, right? I mean, you know, bullpen pieces come and go, especially when you have a bullpen that hasn't had a lot of depth, which has been what we've talked about, you know, how they have three or four guys and then the back four guys in that pen had kind of been, you know, optionable pieces or
Well,
guys
you've
that were
added two
DFA'd, all that.
starters, two relievers. You've added two rookies in Holiday and Mayo in the different places. You're trying to figure out Jimenez. You're trying to figure like all of
Austin
this.
Slater.
Thank you very much. So there's eight guys. Give you eight names.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree with you. That's why I said as much of this is you're trying to win. There is a learning element here. There is an element here of how Brandon Hyde's going to use these guys, how, you know, how the front office kind of looks at this and say, okay, this is the right spot to use him, or we've tried this and this doesn't look right, so we need to pivot, or, you know,
well, they were playing
in the case
620
of,
ball with the guys they had, right? Like,
well,
let's be honest
but
about
some
that.
Of that. Oh, but also that included pitchers that are no longer healthy. That included position players who are no longer healthy. So, I mean, it's, you know, you part of it was their hand was forced a little bit here with some of these moves. But I think we also saw a team that had some opportunities to try to make themselves better or to try to enhance. And it was nothing dramatic. And look, yeah, to go back to what you said about October.
But it is dramatic. Yeah. It's dramatic when you replace a third of your roster. That is dramatic.
Oh, but not all the. But we're also not talking about all these guys being starting players, right? I mean, you know, Jimenez and Slater, for example, are bench pieces, right? I mean, these are bench pieces or platoon guys. I hear what you're saying, but we also saw this team struggling for a while, and you know, we absolutely saw a need for them to get better in the bullpen and get better on the back half of their rotation. And so they had to do that, right? I mean, you don't just look at it and say, oh, well, 620 ball or whatever, then we're fine. We don't have to do anything, right? No, it doesn't work that way. I mean, you want to try to get better. And for what they did, and I would say in comparison to what other teams in the AL did, you know, I think they did well for themselves. I've even seen, you know, Fangraphs did a piece that, you know, Fangraphs has like their projections where they look at postseason probability and World Series probability and all that. And according to Fangraphs, and look, it's one thing and it's a projection system. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's just on paper what it kind of looks like. This, you know, this Fangraphs, I think it's the Zips projections. Dave Zimborski does those. Said that the Orioles actually improved their World Series probability better than anyone in the AL with the moves they made at the deadline. Now, they were incremental. It's not like the Orioles doubled their World Series chances by what they did. I mean, to your point, it was on the margins. But hey, if you can get better on the margins without giving up too much in terms of draft, or, you know, not draft picks, in terms of prospects, then why wouldn't you do it? So, you know, we're going to see how it plays out. And look, they could have made the biggest moves, the biggest moves you could make. And that doesn't guarantee you a World Series. That doesn't guarantee you an ALCS. We've talked about it. How many big name trades have been made over the years that either didn't work out or it did work out and the guy was really, really good, yet you still didn't get to the World Series because it's really difficult and it's baseball and it's high variance. And when you have expanded the playoff field to the degree that they have in recent years, it becomes a lot more random events. I mean, it really does. Arizona wasn't the best team in the NL last year. They weren't even close to the best team in the NL last year. The Rangers were a wild card team last year. So it's no longer about, oh, we must win the most number of games we can win in the AL, and then that will assure us of going to the World Series. It doesn't play out that way very often anymore. I mean, it really doesn't. And that's what's kind of scary about this. If you're – look at the Dodgers. Look at how many wins they've accumulated over the last decade. How many World Series did they have to show for it? One, and it was in the weird pandemic shortened year. So, I mean, it really is a tough proposition, and I don't say that to be dismissive of this team needing to take the next step. I absolutely agree with you that I would say anything short of at least, let's say, getting to the ALCS would be a colossal disappointment for this team. But that said, they got to stay healthy the rest of the way. I mean, they certainly can't afford to lose any more pitching. Then the expectations might change if, heaven forbid, something happens to a Grayson Rodriguez or an Eflin or a Corbin Burns. Then we're talking about a totally different set of expectations. But where they are right now, it really is a case of figure this out in terms of how all these pieces fit with the bullpen and, you know, hope to get something out of Trevor Rogers. You know, obviously that first start was pretty ugly. Quite frankly, that was not good. You know, you're hoping that it was more a case of reporting a new team, hadn't really met everyone yet, and he's starting that night. So you're hoping he's better next time out. You're hoping that these young guys, you know, talking about Holiday and Mayo, can settle in, and looks like Holiday is. We'll see about Mayo. And in the case of Jimenez and Austin Slater, just be a good fit. You know, be a good teammate. Be accepting of your role. When you get it, when your number's called, go out there and do the job. You know, if you do that, then you have a team that may not win 101 games like they did last year, or not win 106 like they were on pace to do several weeks ago, but they'll be in the playoffs and they'll be as formidable as just about anyone. So at that point, it's a matter of who's hot in early October. And then you try to ride that wave to a World Series. I mean, it really is. There's a lot more luck and random events that occurring in that than anyone really wants to admit. That's why what's paramount is getting in. And that's why you like the first round bye, because you don't have to deal with the best of three that, I mean, a best of three, who the heck knows what's going to happen, right? I mean, you could put the best team in baseball against the worst team in baseball, I guess, maybe other than the White Sox, because they're really, really bad. But put anyone in baseball on a best of three, who knows what's going to happen. So this is all about right now. I mean, obviously they have to keep winning, but they are really trying to figure out who exactly they are the rest of the way, which kind of sounds a little scary. But there's also some really interesting opportunity and upside there that they might be able to unlock. That's why I love seeing Holiday and Mayo here, because whatever lumps they might take right now, you're hoping that makes them that much better in September and October. And I mean, we saw this with the Rangers, you know, look at some of the guys they were counting on last October that weren't even on their roster in June. And they had those guys making big time contributions for them. So you never really know how it's going to play out. And so it makes it so fun, right? Buck Showalter used to always say, if we know what's going to happen every night, boy, baseball would be really boring. But, you know, it's definitely a different team, a revamped roster. And, you know, they regrouped nicely against Cleveland. And now we're going to see what this looks like against the AL East over the next week.
Well, you know, the one interesting thing that happens whenever they play in Toronto is I get to figure out whether Geddy Lee is going to be behind home plate. Did Geddy give up the tickets? I haven't seen a behind home plate all
They
year.
Didn't trade him, right? I mean, they traded other guys. I hope they
did not trade. If they can't trade Geddy, because there's no other team that plays in Canada. Geddy's not leaving Canada. I mean, maybe play for the Expos with Warren Cromartie or something like that. Luke Jones can be found. He's not getting traded either. We'll trade him out to Owings Mills this week for Ravens camp. We're going to talk a lot of Ravens this week, what's going on there. And maybe this speaks to Geddy living in the suburbs. He can't get there by 6:30. The games are 7 o'clock games in Toronto all week long. So you get an extra half an hour to eat your food before you turn to Kevin Brown or whoever's the broadcasters are. Home run riches is going on for the Maryland Lottery. Grand slams with Jackson Holiday running poor John Martin around to find $5,000 to pay all these winners. The Gold Rush sevens doublers I will have in my pocket 2 weeks from Friday when we're at Fade Lee's down in Lexington Market. I'm wearing my Costas shirt. We're back to Costas in September as well. They have big fat crabs over there right now as well. All of our sponsors, we're getting out. We're going to be at Coco's on September 4th. You'll be interested in hearing this, Luke Jones. There's I don't know if you heard that Mark Viviano retired. He's coming out of retirement for 1 hour to talk sports with me on the eve of the Chiefs and the Ravens. So Mark Viviano will be our guest at Coco's as we bring the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. The Oyster Tour begins on September 5th. I've got all sorts of, man, I am looking at these oyster places all around town, going to some new places, really looking forward to that. Damie's had me eating some fried oysters down at Fadley's. So September is a month with an R. So we will have oysters all month long. And the Oyster Recovery Project, I'll be teaching you why what that is when they take all the shells and they put them in the little bag and they tell you don't throw the shells away. I'll be educating folks all month about how that makes your crab cakes taste better. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Orioles baseball, even when they're north of the border. We're BaltimorePositive.com. Stay with us.